We're joined now on Zoom by food policy analyst, multiple James Beard winner, Corby Kummer. Corby is the executive director of the Food and Society Policy Program at the Aspen Institute, senior editor at The Atlantic, and a senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy. Hello, Corby. How are you?
Hello, Jim. Hello, Marjorie.
Nice to see you.
Hello, Corby Kummer. So we talked to you a lot about a SNAP, a program for people.
Oh, wait. We have a question for him first.
We do?
So is Jeffrey Goldberg a sleazebag, yes or no?
He is certainly not. He's the only person who has behaved honorably in this entire signal fiasco.
Okay, fine.
Oh, wait a minute.
If you don't know, he works
else.
At The Atlantic,
he
and Jeffrey Goldberg is the guy who was on the chat, and Trump called him a sleazebag.
Yeah, and there's somebody else who's getting a lot of kudos, Lauren Powell. Jobs, who owns The Atlantic. She's hailed as one of the few billionaires who's not in the media, who's not on bended knee to Donald Trump, and she, of course, is the widow of Steve Jobs, and she's one of your bosses there, right?
She's the owner, and she's allowed and authorized the hiring of many of the Washington Post star reporters.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, and the Atlantic does great stuff. But anyway, back to Mr. Cod Liver Oil, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He's the health secretary now, and he's the one that is telling people to, you know, vitamin A and cod liver oil for measles instead of really, really pushing hard for vaccines. Now he wants to allow states to bar people who are on SNAP from buying soda. What's the story?
Well, Congress forbids the restriction of SNAP food assistance. It forbids restricting it to say you can't buy foods we don't like sodas. And RFK Jr. is saying, yes, SNAP should forbid soda purchases and snacks. And West Virginia appeared last Friday at a big rally with a Republican governor of West Virginia who recently signed legislation banning artificial food dyes and preservatives, which RFK Jr. hates, and also said, I'm going to, it's a state-by-state decision, I'm going to apply for a waiver to allow restriction of SNAP funds in my state. No buying soda with SNAP in West Virginia. And RFK said, I'm going to authorize that. I encourage other states to do it. There's one catch. He has no power to authorize
it. It's incredible.
So it's not his province at all. It's Brooke Rollins at USDA. Now, Brooke Rollins tweeted, if one says Xing, her support for this and saying, I'm looking forward to the leadership of West Virginia and working closely with the Secretary of Health, that's RFK Jr., to have other states enact these restrictions. But again, you know, what actually happens in the Times, New York Times was reporting that her aides are fighting a tooth and nail with RFK Jr.'s aides saying we don't really want to authorize these. So what happens, nobody knows.
Can I make three quick points? For those who are saying, well, why? We've had this debate with Corby the last few weeks. We've talked about it. About, well, if it's government money and my tax money, why should they be able to buy unhealthy food? The research we cited last week, a recipient of SNAP is no more likely to spend money from his or her budget on soda than you and I are. That's one. Not to mention that arguably people should be free if they're entitled to money to do what they choose. Number two, do you know what else he said while he was in West Virginia, Corby, specifically to the this is RFK, to the governor of West Virginia?
Something like, I'll reward you if you lose 10 pounds.
Exactly. You should lose weight is what he says to the thing. And final, this is not really a food-related thing, but we haven't talked about this, and we should have. Speaking of RFK, the chief vaccine guy under him for the FDA, this guy Peter Marks, resigned the other day rather than being fired. And here were his parting remarks. However, it has become clear the truth and transparency are not desired by the secretary, meaning RFK Jr., but rather he wishes subservient confirmation of his misinformation and lies. That statement could be made not just about vaccines, but about almost anything RFK is proselytizing about, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And today's a particularly bad day because health departments, like all of tobacco control, has been abolished overnight at both FDA and CDC, all of tobacco regulation control. And so the parade of scathing resignation letters is, you know, incredibly upsetting. Like the CDC communications director who said, I'm not going to start spreading misinformation and causing children liver damage from promoting vitamin A for measles and antibiotics that have no effect on the virus that causes measles. Scathing resignation letters, and lots of our friends who worked in the health system, we were encouraging, and they were thinking, we just want to stay to try to work rather than, you know, going out in a ball of fire. But the problem is, this morning, as of 5 a.m., even the ones who were brave and wanted to stay are being fired, or else, in this sort of sinister and weird move, they're being moved to the Indian Health Service, which doesn't even have jobs for them, but it's a way of moving them out of the mainstream. So that's just happening today.
When you said tobacco regulations, what does it mean that if you look up, I mean, explain that a little bit more, being gone.
Well, I know that tobacco cessation, the department is being wiped out at CDC.
Okay.
Maybe the administration says they're going to move it elsewhere. Regulation was the more important way because, remember, David Kessler, a long ago FDA commissioner, helped enable the ability of the FDA to regulate nicotine in tobacco and nicotine levels. And it was a way of reducing nicotine levels and reducing addiction rates. So it's enormously important, tobacco regulation.
By the way, an anonymous texter says, I'm confused. Weren't you all for restricting the size of sodas? That was the Bloomberg proposal in New York. And taxing sodas. That was Deval Patrick.
Were.
I am and was. Now you're defending people using Snap to buy that which you're against. Am I missing something? Actually, you are. My position is, and I think Corby's, everybody should be treated the same way. We should limit soda sizes, I believe, for everybody. We should tax soda and give it the health stuff. But if it turns out somebody's an upper middle class person like me is able to buy a soda, so should a person who is legally eligible for a Snap benefit.
Jim wanted teeny tiny Coke bottles.
I did.
About 3 ounces
in
there. That was his idea.
Nips. I call them nips is what they would be.
Nips.
We're talking to Corby Cummer.
So speaking of food and drink, it's a little disconcerting to know that you might wind up, if you have a black bean and grain burger or a spinach artichoke ravioli, you could have a metal bolt in your food or pieces of rubber. I mean, a lot of foreign objects and food, is this new? Is this, or has this been going on forever? Or what's the deal?
I think it's been going on forever.
That's
so there's a Washington Post story about manufacturing areas that are, you know, it's sort of comic and it's horrible, dropping bolts into food that make people choke. I think that was a black bean and grain burger and slider. Nestle said it was recalling several frozen meals because of wood-like material. And, you know, Stouffer said there's only been one potential choking incident to date. These are so ludicrous, they're kind of comical, but they're also horrifying. Metal shards.
Metal shards.
I think it's more that it's being detected and reported and that it's always happened. Even though I really would like to blame it for the lack of inspection and administration's pulling back on inspectors, I don't know that that's the actual reason. I think it's more just being noticed. And in the comic vein, the maker of Chomp's original beef sticks said it was recalling nearly 30,000 pounds of product that contained metal. They might want to change their name from Chomp.
By the way, just so people are not turned off to black bean and grain burgers in general, the brand, I never heard of the Chef's Line.
I never heard of it either.
Was the name of the company, had the metal bolt in the burger.
But the thing I'm concerned about, so this has been happening for a long time, which is terrible, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the FDA are supposed to be on top of this, but are they going to get these DOGE massive slashings like everybody else or
yeah,
not?
Of course they are.
Okay.
So the government has been careful to say that they haven't cut food inspectors in today FDA cuts. They've only cut all of the people who make the rules for them and supervise them.
Okay. So you know, watch out for the metal bolts going forward. I think a word to the wise, Jim.
And if you find one, don't eat it. It's that simple. So, Corby, we've talked a lot about how critical undocumented workers are to the food supply in this country. I have said to you about 500 times, why are the big farmers that are so dependent upon these people not speaking louder than they are? Well, while they're not speaking loudly, apparently the Farm Workers Union, remember we had Dolores Huerta on, co-founder of the Farm Workers Union with Cesar Chavez, one of the most
really impressive
inspirational moments ever. The Farm Workers Union is now organizing in places on the East Coast that had never been before. And some of the people talk about courage. who were involved in the organizing are the people of, is it H-2A? That's the agricultural visa as opposed to H-2B, which I think is the non-agricultural worker. They're engaged in this, even though they put themselves at great risk. It's really an inspiring story, but the question is it going to work? Meaning, are they just going to end up being targeted for deportation? Are they going to be able to I mean, what's the bottom line here?
I don't know what is going to happen. The story is that New York State Apple workers are reorganized by the United Farm Workers Union, whose headquarters and stronghold have always been in California.
Sure.
And it was founded in 1962 by Cesar Chavez. There was recently Cesar Chavez Day and Dolores Huerta, who you were just talking about. But in, for example, New York State, it's Jamaicans. And they're on H-2A visas, and they apparently go home after harvest season. Will they be allowed back if they organize? Another interesting part of this Civil Eats story, which has been doing great reporting, unionization, is how by 2024, there was a tiny 10% of farm workers were unionized. It had come way, way down. It had more than been cut in half, partly because of immigration status, but partly because there was just a lowering popularity of unions. And I think farm workers have been afraid. You remember that huge owners in California hire goons, essentially, to come in and have listening sessions in which they tell them, you will be worse off if you join a union. And I don't know if that's been happening in New York State. But they don't feel protected by laws, even though there's a New York State Constitution that guarantees farm workers the right to organize. There were exemptions in other states saying farms could prevent their workers from organizing. That was one of the more horrifying.
Well, unless I'm wrong, the National Labor Relations Act, which protects people's right to organize, explicitly excludes farm workers, does it not?
Right. It's shocking.
Yeah,
and so
true.
It was up to state by state to protect workers, and New York State does.
You know, for people, a lot of our listeners are too young to remember this, but I hope they know a little bit of history. We talk about boycotts a lot on this show, and most, it appears, either are too limited or whatever to be successful. It's fair to say the great boycott of, which obviously was the United Farm Worker effort under Chavez and Huerta and others, from the early 70s, late 60s, whenever it was a huge national effort and a huge success, wasn't it?
It was a huge success. And what I'm waiting for now is some kind of similar effort that allows plain citizens the chance to register their discontent and their unhappiness. And that was a way of giving agency to anyone who objected to this kind of inhumanity, like the inhumanity right now to farm owners who had applied to the USDA for funds that the Biden administration made available to build housing for workers, make their conditions better. And now those contracts are being canceled, or if they haven't been canceled, small farm owners are out hundreds of thousands of dollars they put into making conditions for their farm workers better.
Well, by the way, you say you're waiting for the next great boycott. I don't know if I'm telling tales out of school. Marjorie has made it clear that as soon as she makes one other additional huge purchase from Amazon, you're done with Amazon. Is that not what your position
that's
is?
Right. That's right.
Maybe
just,
Sunday night, and then after
Sunday
that.
Sunday night, yeah.
I'm right with you.
All right, that's right.
Okay.
Okay, so this is a great story about the Army's lousy food, and it begins with this quote. Apparently, there's an age-old Army marching song that describes a biscuit that rolled off the table and killed a friend of mine.
You never heard that song?
No, I never heard
that
song.
Can we try to get that song in the next few minutes?
Thank you. But anyway, they talk about how they have this horrible nondescript meat glistening with grease and tacos and gross tacos and Brussels sprouts with the green boiled out of them. But they may be facing a change now at the Army, at least in some of their bases. What's going on?
So there are periodic efforts to make Army food more appetizing, and armed services food. And now this celebrity chef, I admit to not knowing, Robert Irvine, who had done TV shows, he had a temporary disgrace, he's come back, but he was first trained in the British Navy. And one of his disgraces, he was lying, he said he helped make King Charles's wedding cake, and he got boycotted from television. Can you imagine the magnitude of a lie you know, like that, losing somebody a job today, given the lies we hear every day. He's helping create, what do they call it? Victory, not Victory Garden, the Victory Fresh.
Yeah.
These small, sleek, really good cafeterias with pizza, with lots of meat-heavy dishes, but that's what our personnel like, plus sweet greens like salads. And he's hoping to roll these out more. And the military is saying, we aren't cutting this with all of our DOGE cuts. We're going to keep this pilot going, and we're going to try. The most interesting part of the story to me, oh, let's just have a horrifying statistic, which is that 70% of active duty service members are overweight, and 21%
Stunning.
Are obese. And recall that the original and most important U.S. nutrition program, School Lunch, was started because after the Depression, so many school children, high school students were so, they had scurvy, they had rickets, they were so undernourished that they couldn't serve in the military. So now it's just the other side of the coin. They're too fat to serve. And so there's got to be an effort to make
awful.
The meat better. But the most interesting part of the story is all of the military eats at fast food places around bases because
yeah.
they hate the food so much. And it reminded me so much of in the school food efforts, you know, starting before the Obama administration, definitely during the Obama administration, rules were enacted that prevented fast food outlets from opening within 200 feet, I can't remember the distance specified, of schools, so that children could not go out during the 20-minute horribly short school break and buy a burger, and also preventing McDonald's from having kiosks of the voluntary food, there's, I forget the euphemism, optional food within. And obviously the military should be restricting fast food locations from such easy access to bases.
You know, I know this is going to sound like an incredibly naive question. One would think that even if you don't, I mean, you know, what's your line in all your columns in the old days? The last refuge of scoundrels, politicians,
oh, yeah.
they're doing it for the children.
Right.
Well, another refuge of scoundrels is we care deeply about
the
men and women who have served our country.
Yeah, they read it, moldy bread, expired
but you
dairy,
would think,
it's gross.
Even if they don't give a damn about the people who are serving, they want them to serve well, and it seems to me not eating crap probably helps get you there. So, you know, I'm surprised people like Seth Moulton never told us about this. He was a Marine, not in the
yeah.
Army. But so do you know any of the history of this? Why haven't they been willing? Is it all about saving money and cheap, crappy food is better for our budget?
I have read things about it, and it's mostly money, the ability to do it on a large scale, resistance of a huge bureaucracy. By the same token, I think that the military did have restrictions on what it allowed its canteens to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember my great mentor, Dan Glickman, former Secretary of Agriculture, saying if only SNAP and school cafeterias enacted and adopted purveying restrictions that the military has on military bases, that could help. It's clearly not appetizing enough for the military. And while we're on the military, up to 35 to 40% of military families can face food insecurity because
that's
the military
horrible.
Is paid so
badly.
Isn't
that badly. Horrible? Isn't that
and
horrible?
That's another important fact that just falls by the wayside.
By the way, I lobbied your friend Dan Glickman when he was in Congress around legal services funding issues. So there's a odd link
okay.
there. So before you go.
We have big story.
This is a huge story.
Big
New York
story.
Times.
New York Times, that's right.
What's it say?
Well, it says steak fries, colon, deservedly reviled or underappreciated edible spoon. And this whole long story about the pros and cons of steak fries, I guess it's going to be a new ground round. Remember the ground rounds used to be around
sure.
here all over the place? It's going to be opening one in Shrewsbury. And they're really excited about the steak fries.
No, they're
back.
Not. The new owners said, we asked our potential customers, and not one of them, what they wanted to eat, not one of them said they wanted a steak
That's
fry.
That's right. That's
okay.
right. I had it backwards.
Okay. So first of all, one of our staff members, who is rather uninformed about critical issues, said to us this morning, what is a steak fry?
Yeah, I didn't know what
so
a steak
why don't
fry
we
was.
Oh, was that you?
No, it was me.
Oh,
That's
oops.
Right.
Sorry.
Yep.
It was not an uninformed staff member. It was my coworker.
No,
here.
I get the backwards staff
okay,
member.
Whatever.
That would be.
Could you describe, it doesn't have to be visually. Do your best there, Corby Comer. What's a steak fry?
Well, imagine cutting across a potato the long way and only then cutting it once lengthwise. So you'd have about an inch wide. Say you had a 2-inch diameter in a potato. And so you've got a very wide piece of potato, like a wide swath. So they're really wide and they're really big. And apparently it's hard to cover a plate economically with steak fries, and so they're uneconomical. The real problem is that all that surface area means they don't hold their crisp. You know, the whole the cult of French fries is double frying them, so at the last minute you're keeping them crisp. But this way it's so hard for the grease to reach the interior and stay crisp that they get soggy right away. So they're uneconomical to cover a plate. They don't look particularly appetizing on a plate because there's only a couple of them, and they get soggy. But what's their utility? They can mop up sauce. So if you have like this great barbecue or spicy sauce that people love and you want to use, this is a way people don't particularly want utensils, they can dip the steak fry into sauce, and they've got a great holder for sauce and plenty of grease to go with it.
You know, I always guess when we're talking about a particular food whether Corby has ever even had one. I would guess, looking at you, that a steak fry has never crossed your lips. Is that a safe assumption?
No, it has. You know,
how many?
Nothing food is alien to me. So, of course, I've had a steak fry.
How many steak fries in your whole life?
At least two, maybe three.
Okay.
That's what I assumed.
Well, by the description, I don't think we've been missing much. It don't sound very good.
Hey, Corby, can we end where we started for a second? What is Jeffrey Goldberg like as a boss? Obviously, everybody knows he's in the news because he was the reporter who was mistakenly included in that Signal chat thing. What is Goldberg like as a boss there?
He is humorous as a person and completely delightful company.
That's a good enough thing. Do you want to hear the song "They Say That in the Army" by Jonathan Michael Fleming? Do you want to hear that?
Sure.
We have some of it, courtesy of Marjorie Staff. Here is here is part of "They Say That in the Army." Here it is.
Say that in the army, the chow is mighty fine.
They say that in the army, the chow is mighty fine.
A chicken jumped off the table and started marking time.
A chicken jumped off the table and started marking time.
Hey! They say that in the army, the biscuits are mighty fine.
They say that in the army, the biscuits are mighty fine.
One rolled off the table and killed a friend of mine.
That's a okay, Jonathan Michael Fleming, thank you very much. It's a beautiful tune.
Very good.
It's a marching song.
It is a marching song.
That's right.
For biscuits.
Biscuits, hard as a rock. Okay.
Corby Comer, it's good to see you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Corby Comer.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Corby Comer, Executive Director of the Food and Society Policy Program at the Aspen Institute, a senior editor at The Atlantic, and a senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy.